I got an email from an extremely intelligent human being. I'll say that. But this is so fascinating to me because what they're doing is they're doing a COVID-19 early treatment. What is the name of this website? Okay, here's the name of the website. Small C. When I say small c, I just mean a lowercase c, and then the number 19, and then in lowercase the word early.com. C19early.com. I like this because what it has is it has all the, it's looking at the efficacy of all the treatments that are available for COVID-19. And I'm not going to like hit this real long, just for a little bit here, but they kind of rank them as far as what the cost is, how many studies have been done, the number of patients, the percentage of improvement. And that one's always been kind of a pretty important number to me. And then they have the relative risk, meaning how effective is the stuff? And is there a risk or a danger to you to take it? Okay. And so let me start off with one of the most popular ones. There's a infusion, or given intravenously. It's called remdesivir. And it says there have been 28 studies. And the number of people in these studies to treat COVID-19 is exactly 105,935. So what is the cost of it? It has it right here. $3,120. Now, I don't know if that's true because I haven't paid that or taken it, but I'm sure somebody has. You know what the effectiveness rate or what the rate of improvement is when you take remdesivir? 20%. That doesn't sound too good. Now, just beneath it is aspirin. Aspirin has a 17% improvement rate. And you know what that cost? $1. Or if you want to say un peso, that's close enough, or un dólar. So there's not much difference between 20% improvement and 17%. That is bad. Now, the one that really gets me here is just blows my mind. They're looking at convalescent plasma. So if someone has had COVID-19, hopefully what will happen is between their thymus gland and their bone marrow, stem cells, Peyer's patches, the spleen, you will generate antibodies against the COVID-19, okay? And so if you generate antibodies, you might give it to somebody or donate to somebody that's pretty sick. And the sick person may get some benefit, at least that's the theory. So I'm looking at it, and it is absolutely the most risky substance to get a person. And of course, I haven't read all the reasons why, so that's my fault right there. But they said there's like a minus 1% improvement. You know what that means, folks? That means you get worse. There's 14 studies, 15,607 people, and it costs $5,000. I don't know about you, but if you said, yeah, I'll pay $5,000 to put me at really high risk, and I'll actually be worse by minus 1%. Anyway, what's the other one right here? Oh, yeah, this one caught my attention. Has anybody ever heard of vitamin A before? Well, of course you have. What do you think of when you think of vitamin A? Well, you probably think of things like, eating carrots. Or what's something else from the fruit family that's like brightly orange color like a carrot? Well, it might be a mango, okay? And so they looked at the use of vitamin A. There were 6 studies, 15,923 people in the studies. Of course, the vitamin A cost, what, $2 for a treatment or for the full treatment? I can't make this stuff up. 59% improvement. And you're going, okay. All right, I like that. Then they look at, I can't pronounce the name of that drug right there. It just costs $700. It's an antiviral. It only gets you 34% improvement. I mean, literally, you don't have to be an advanced mathematician to figure these stats out. If you take vitamin A, 59% improvement. Why do you think they call vitamin A vitamin A? It's because they give it the letter A, not because it's the first fat-soluble vitamin. Well, maybe it was. I take that back. But they call it the anti-infective vitamin. Did you know that vitamin A is extremely important at protecting all the mucus line membranes that you have in your body? And I'm talking about ears, eyes, nose, mouth, throat. You know, your immune system is one big honking hollow tube from your mouth all the way down to the other end. You know what I'm referring to. But you got to have vitamin A to make that stuff work. And so vitamin A proved to be 59% improvement or effective at improving COVID-19. When's the last time you've heard that? Now, this is the other one. Anybody ever heard of taking quercetin before? Okay, they say a treatment of quercetin costs $5. They have done 8 studies, and there's exactly 1,229 people in these studies, and they're saying, what is the relative risk of taking it? Well, it's not risky at all. It's quercetin. What do you think you're doing when you eat an apple or you have some onions? I love onions. I love apples too. But when you eat those, guess what you're getting? You're getting quercetin. It's shown to be 74% effective in 8 studies that cost $5. Now, the other one that gets me is ivermectin, and this one tops the list. I can't find... Okay, there's another one. I'll get to that momentarily. Okay, so ivermectin, 64% improvement. There's exactly 78 studies they looked at and trying to pool all the data. That means there's 85,767 people. And it's got like next to no risk. They can't find a horrible risk. So when you hear people on the television say, don't do this, it's like super dangerous, or on the internet, well, what studies are they reading? 64% effective, 78 studies, nearly 86,000, but guess what the cost is? $1. I think you could probably start to figure out why maybe they don't want to use this drug, okay? Where's the other one down here? Okay, where is it? Okay, right here, hydroxychloroquine. I've got a crack in my screen on my phone, so, okay. Now, this is the big one right here. That's the cheap one also, hydroxychloroquine. 313 studies. This is a big one. 426,562 individuals in the study, but it cost $1. Anyway, enough of that topic right there. I just thought that was kind of interesting. I really appreciate the lady for sending that to me. I'm still taking a look at all these studies. So fascinating. All mortality, meaning who lives? Well, if you were taking melatonin, there's a pretty good chance you're going to live. And how expensive is melatonin? $1 for a treatment. Vitamin D. What was vitamin D in this study? Let me see if I can go back to vitamin D. Okay, here we go. Okay, there was 66 studies, 125,000 people, give or take a few hundred people, $1 a day, or less than $1. And 40% improvement. I mean, come on. It's like a gold mine. I think, in the Bible, I think there's a verse that says, above all else, guard your heart, for it is the wellspring of life. And I'm trying to work through that in my mind right now. I'm trying to ask myself a question. What should I focus my energy on? How should I spend my time? What should I be doing? And the truth is, there's things that I know for a fact are completely counterproductive. They don't really generate better health. You're not going to perform any better. It doesn't enable you to perform at a higher level in accomplishing all the things that you really want to accomplish. So you've got to question and guard your mind and heart against what you take in. The other point is, you got a free will. You get to choose exactly what you put in your mouth. Nobody can force you against your will. Good morning. Welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for asking.
Well, glad to hear that. I have a small...
You have what?
...of my right foot hurts when I put pressure on it. And I haven't really done anything. I kind of thought that I might have stepped on something out in the yard or whatever, and that was a stone bruise, but it's been going on for about 2 months now.
Okay, where on your foot is it located? I didn't catch that part.
The heel.
The heel, okay, yeah.
And when I, step down, It's kind of painful.
Does it get better the more that you walk and move?
Not really.
Okay. Well, maybe you did have a stone bruise. Don't you remember running from that pack of wolves and you put your heel right on a sharp rock? Did you forget about that?
I don't. I guess I did forget about that. Okay.
I would have remembered that personally because it's been very few occasions that I've been able to outrun wolves.
I know, yeah.
Okay, so as far as you know, is there any discoloration in the area? Does it look purple or bruised? Do you have
no.
a bunch of broken blood vessels around it?
No, there's not.
Okay, so what we're going to do is, even if we can't figure out what caused it and we don't have a clue that you were that you injured it by running barefoot on a bunch of rocks, so what we do is we're just going to take a course of action to try to help your body heal and repair itself. And, of course, I think you will agree with me, but God has designed the body to heal and repair itself.
Oh, definitely.
And so let me give you two or three or four ideas, and you just kind of pick and choose which ones sound good to you. Okay, one technique is just to rub castor oil. You know, just plain Jane castor oil.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the store the other day, and I picked up a bottle, and I just kind of tilted it back and forth to watch the little bubble of air slowly move from the top to the bottom. I mean, from the bottom to the top. Yeah, you didn't know I was like a big kid, did you?
Yes, I do. Okay. I've listened to you for a long time.
Well, anyway, I was at the health food store, and I thought, these people are going to think I'm a weirdo playing with a bottle of castor oil. But anyway, it's just a very thick, viscous oil. But what happens is castor oil is a very, very interesting substance. And so wherever you apply it, you're going to increase your lymphatic circulation and your blood flow to that area. So, for example, if a woman says, I don't like this whole COVID-19 thing, my eyelashes and eyebrows, they're not as thick as they used to be. Well, what do you think some of the women have done to get around that? They've started rubbing castor oil directly on their eyelashes and on their eyebrows.
Wow.
So, if you go to church tomorrow morning and your eyelashes are super greasy and your eyebrows are too, I think I'll know exactly what you did. But if you wanted to go to bed after rubbing castor oil all over your heel and your foot, then you could do that. Just cover it with a sock to kind of keep it off the bedding and the mattress. But if you do that night after night, what you're doing is you're sending a signal to increase blood flow with more oxygen and more nutrient delivery and more white blood cells to the area, so you kind of can help your body heal it. Okay?
Sounds good.
Treatment number two.
Okay.
There's a substance that's called calcium bentonite clay. It's just a fancy term for mud or for dirt. And so that's one of my most favorite things to experiment with, is when there's an issue that just will not go away and won't heal. And so let me give you one example. I had a lady that came to see me one time, and her complaint was, she said, 8 years ago I had a lumpectomy. And a lumpectomy is where they can contain a very small cancerous tumor, and they can just remove it, and it's a done deal. There's no need for further treatment, so they don't need radiation, they don't need chemo. That almost sounds impossible the way I'm presenting it. When's the last time you've heard of somebody with a cancerous tumor, and the doctor says, now, the good news is you don't need any chemo or radiation? Oh, no. Usually what I hear is, even though we got it all, we need to give you 50 million treatments of this and 40 million treatments of that. And I'm going, are you kidding me? You're going to cause cancer. But anyway, so she came to me saying, Dr. Morgan, I've got the most annoying pain in my chest. It won't go away. And it wasn't in a delicate area where she could show it to me. It was in an area that she was very safe to show it to me. But you could tell by looking at it, there was a discoloration. And so 8 years after the surgery, if you see a discoloration, that's kind of a clue that something under the skin hasn't exactly quite healed yet, whether that's, it's one thing or the other. But it's just a clue in the human body that it hadn't healed. And so I told her about the Indian healing clay, and I think at the time it was going for like $7 at the store. It's just a dry powder. It's got a mixture of calcium bentonite. It's got some kaolin clay, probably volcanic ash or some other type of crushed stones or whatever, but it's very, very good at drawing out inflammation or correcting imbalances in the body. So I had her just mix it up with apple cider vinegar. She applied her mud. It was probably the consistency of what you'd see on a potter's wheel. And she would just expose it to the sun. And I want to say after 2 weeks, she gave me the confirmation that it had completely healed. There was no more annoying pain. Of course, you know the part of her story, and I'm just, you know exactly what I'm thinking because I have to kind of tell you, but I'm listening to her story, and she's going, I've been to so many doctors over this. They tell me it's nothing to be concerned about. And I thought to myself, well, they would be concerned if they had this continual ongoing pain and it was annoying to them. I mean, you would, wouldn't you?
Oh, yes.
So you can try making a mud pack and applying it directly to your heel.
Okay.
All right.
That's number two.
All right. Number three. Take fresh lemon juice. It cannot be the kind that's in the bottle that's been pasteurized. Mm. When you get a bottle of lemon juice, I'm not saying it doesn't have a benefit, but for this, I don't think it does. So if you get a bottle of lemon juice, they've cooked it, they've heated it, they've pasteurized it. And so the lemon juice loses all the living enzymes that would be of great benefit to you. So if you would rub lemon juice on the area, you could do it as much as you want. See if all of a sudden you have spontaneous healing.
Great. Okay. That's good.
And as far as you know, you don't have like great stiffness in your ankle or foot.
No, I really don't.
Well, all your ballerina training is coming back to really benefit you, right?
Right.
Okay, good.
Standing on my toes, yes.
Exactly. So you can try those three things right there. Probably the fourth thing, and I'm just going to tell you what I think about this. I think this is a phenomenal treatment. Now, it's really, really hard to convince somebody to do it. I mean, as in real hard, nearly impossible. But if somebody walks in my office and they say, Dr. Morgan, I've got this foot pain. It won't go away. I've been to the podiatrist, I've been to the orthopedist, I've been to my doctor. It's just so annoying. Now, God has designed in the tissues of the body, and I'll just use the foot, whether you want to call it the ligaments, the tendons, the muscles, the bones, the joints, the joint capsule. You just keep going and going, cartilage. In the human body, there are these proteins that are called cold shock proteins. And when your body releases them, it usually releases them because your body says, are we fixing to freeze to death? What's the deal here? We don't want to die. So they release these cold shock proteins. But it's a tremendous advantage to you that God has hardwired the DNA of your body to release these cold shock proteins when you submerge your foot in a bucket. And you went ahead and called anyway, and you took a risk. Well, but I mean, it's completely your call. I mean, I could probably make jokes coming and going about it, but it's your call as to what you do. But if you submerge your foot, the right one, in a bucket of ice cold water, just pretend that you have your foot on the treadle of an old time Singer sewing machine that, you know, kind of pumping up and down. Mm-hmm. But if you do that for 10 minutes a day, your body is going to rapidly increase blood flow. You know, when you remove your foot from the bucket of ice water, that's going to be as red as a beet, right?
Right.
Well, it's doing that to say, maybe we don't want to die and freeze here, so we're going to increase blood flow and circulation. But those cold shock proteins, they're just amazing how they can take an injured area that's inflamed, the pain's not going away, and all of a sudden your body says, oh my goodness, we're actually healing this now, and the pain goes away. So that's an option you have right there.
Okay, that sounds like a more of a fast one, right?
Well, I'll let you be the judge of that. And the thing of it is, you get to be a judge of all this.
That's true.
Now, if you told me something different, like, and let me give you an example. If you told me you went to a doctor and they did a simple lab test called uric acid and it was above the number 5 on uric acid, I'd probably say I'd blame it on that. Because when uric acid builds up severely enough, you got gout. And gout is absolutely the most painful form of arthritis, in my opinion. If you ever see somebody and look in their eyes when they try to put weight on their foot, I mean, they're saying, I will shoot you if you even look at my foot. Don't touch it. It's too much. So I feel bad for those people. But anyway, those are some things you can think of right there. The mud pack, just leave it on there for 10 to 15 minutes and wash it off.
Okay. I got it.
I mean, it's just mud.
just gets cracked and feels crazy, but that's okay.
Yeah, it does. It's got a very weird feeling as it kind of dries out. So today, if it gets to be 65 degrees and you want to go out and sunbathe your heel while you've got a mud pack on it and it cracks, just remember, wash it off when you're ready to wash it off.
Okay.
But it's so good, though, at drawing the impurities out of the body.
Mm.
If you told me, and now I'm kind of a, I have my own ideals of what I would do given certain circumstances, but let me just talk about me. If I had an infection in my finger that wouldn't go away, you know what I would do? I'd put some mud on it, baby.
Okay.
Trying to pull that poison out.
Gotcha.
So at least that's an idea.
It is, and I appreciate you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you so much for your phone call.
Well, thank you for being here.
You're welcome. Have a great day, ma'am. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Everybody knows that I'm super, super biased. I'm biased toward things that are good for humans, not things that are toxic. Good morning. How are you today?
Very good, doctor.
Great.
How
great.
You, sir?
Glad to have you on the program.
Thank you. Very nice to be here.
Thanks. How can I help?
Yes, sir. About 2 years ago, I was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. I initially was able to keep my A1C down below 7 with exercise and diet, but then it started to gradually creep up, and I was, at the time, I was busy caring for my terminally ill wife, and I wasn't able to get, thank you, sir. I wasn't able to exercise as much as I needed to, and my blood sugar started creeping up. And now I'm perplexed because I'm back to my regimen of exercise and diet, and I can't seem to get my sugars down. And my doctor has got me on 2,000 milligrams of metformin daily, along with two other medications, and we're possibly looking at insulin, and I really want to stay away from that if possible.
Well, let me compliment you on being the greatest caregiver of all time. I think that's great.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
So, do you know what a feeding window is? Have you ever heard the term intermittent fasting or a feeding window?
I'm a little familiar with it. I listen to your program regularly.
Well, this may completely be counter to what your physician is telling you and guiding you toward giving you insulin, all that great, wonderful stuff. But there was a study done years ago where they asked the question, what is absolutely the most effective dietary regimen to reverse diabetes? And so when I see a headline like that, it really catches my attention. I said, did the author know that they use the word reverse and cure diabetes? Because that sounds like you're making it go away. So, you know, obviously I want to take a look at it. And so let me just try to oversimplify it. What they did was they looked at the American Diabetes Association diet. They looked at the American Red Cross diet. I really just made that last one up. I don't know if that's really true. American Heart Association, American Dietitians. It just kept going and going and going. And so when I looked at these studies, every single one of them was a failure. So I'm not trying to criticize them. It doesn't do any good to do that. Let's just say they weren't effective. They didn't cure anything. They didn't reverse diabetes. It didn't go away. Now, what I found interesting was they had this group of highly rebellious adults. I don't know if you know anything about rebellious adults, but they tend to question everything, and they don't really go along with, you know, what everybody says. You know what I mean?
Yes, sir.
And so in this, and there, I'm almost positive it was like about 425 or 480. But anyway, I'm just trying to tell you there was easily 400 plus people that participated in the study. And what they did was they said, okay, you're not going to follow our dietary regimen. You're going to do your own thing. Well, we're going to fix your little red wagon. We're going to watch you and prove you wrong. And so here's what happened. Everyone in the study said, you know what? What you're doing ain't working, so what we're going to do is we're going to do our own thing. And what they did was they skipped breakfast.
Okay.
And so by skipping breakfast, and so let me just kind of paint a picture here. Let's say you eat your very last meal of the day at 5 o'clock. I'm just kind of choosing a simple number. If you don't eat anything after 5 o'clock, meaning you sit down, eat your meal, and you're done, let's just say you start at 5 o'clock to make it sound simple. If you don't eat after that meal, from 5 o'clock, well, what you're going to have is when you eat the meal, you're going to have a very significant demand or need for insulin. Does that make sense?
Okay.
Okay. And so, but if you don't eat anything after 5 o'clock, I mean, you drink water, you could probably drink herbal tea, something like that. And but if you don't eat anything else from 5 o'clock in the evening till 5 o'clock in the morning, essentially, you've had a 12-hour fast. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir.
Okay, most of that's probably taken up by sleeping deeply, hopefully. So when you wake up in the morning, you got a choice. You can say, you know what am I going to do here? Am I going to run through the drive-thru and get myself a big stack of pancakes and waffles and, you know, whatever else it might be loaded with sugar? Mm-hmm. Well, if you do that, it'd be a big mistake. Yeah. But what they noticed in the study was they had the highest number of people that were completely cured, meaning they didn't require any metformin or insulin or drugs, which you're going to have to come to terms with this. You're going to make a lot of drug executives extremely sad if they don't have a customer that keeps coming back every month for more drugs. Now, I don't know if you can deal with that emotionally by hurting their feelings. I have no problem with it. But you might need to go into deep therapeutic counseling to make sure you don't hurt the drug company's feelings over this deal.
I'll try to work through it.
Yeah. And so what happens is if you don't have anything to eat from 5 o'clock in the morning to, say, let me just say 11 o'clock to make it sound simple. So you've got 12, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. There's 6 plus 12. That's an 18-hour fast. And so you've got this feeding window where all the food you're going to eat is in a 6-hour window, which, like a gentleman told me a couple weeks ago, he said, yeah, it was hard for a week, and then my body adapted to it. And he's just showing me all the incredible weight he's lost. And I thought, man, this is amazing. And so I've tried this technique over and over and over again. I haven't seen it fail yet. And so what you're doing is you're trying to reset the insulin receptors in your body. But if you go 18 hours between your last meal and your next meal, what you're doing is that's probably one of the most effective strategies at lowering your need for insulin over time. Now, is that something that you might consider doing, or is that something you're already doing?
I would definitely consider doing that, yes.
So you realize this is the exact polar opposite of them telling you to snack frequently, to eat a lot of stuff here and there to keep it's just completely the opposite of that.
Mm-hmm.
So you're trying to make it easy on your body. And so what I would just kind of throw in there, the lower your need for insulin, the longer you live and the healthier you are. It's really just as simple as that.
Okay.
And let me tell you what this woman told me this last week. The week before. But I thought, because I asked her, I said, okay, what are you cooking for supper tonight for you and the kids and your husband and family? And she said, okay, I'm going to have spaghetti and meatballs. I said, really? And she said, yeah, instead of using spaghetti noodles, she's going to take cabbage and shred it and kind of saute it kind of lightly. And so guess what she's putting in the kids' plate? Kind of a bed of cabbage. And she's putting meatballs on top of it. That's brilliant.
All right. That's
and so
diet.
Exactly, there you go. And so, you know, I know for a fact all these things I'm telling you, they're very easy to do when someone's terrified they're going to die. And when they feel like they've got no other choice, I can get them to do it every single time. I don't even have to try. I don't have to break a sweat. Now, a person that's kind of like a know-it-all, and they go, well, I'm the expert, and I'm going, ma'am, you weigh 400 pounds, you're not the expert. Just come to reality here.
Yes, sir.
And so if you would consider a feeding window, but you would start consuming mainly lower starch vegetables, and here's the truth of it, you'll never win at this if you're eating grains. You just won't. So if a doctor says, I want you to eat French bread for lunch and whole wheat rolls and cornbread for supper, you just won't be able to successfully get over the hump. But I kind of tell from your voice, you want to live. I like that. I like that strong force of will that you have. That's good.
I don't have a weight issue, you know, but I do. I do consume like 2 slices of whole grain bread every day.
Well, the other thing that I never even covered with you, and please forgive me, I'm not trying to be insensitive. If I am, just slap me down on the radio and tell me I'm wrong. But I can only imagine the amount of just deep, deep stress that you went through taking care of your ailing wife. And I'm so sorry for that, but it had to be just a gut-wrenching experience at every turn.
It was very difficult. It was a privilege to care for her. It made me realize in some ways how selfish I am as a person.
You're just a lovely human being by saying all that. And I want you to know I appreciate everything you're saying. I could say the same thing about myself. I could say Roy has been very arrogant, and he's been selfish too. But the thing of it is, if we talk about it, we're trying to make it better, aren't we?
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
So you're like a beautiful human being, and I would venture a guess that's one of the components that you're trying to heal from also. Because if your body, technically on paper, you don't even have to have sugar to make your blood sugar shoot up. All you have to do is just feel anxious and stressed on the inside.
Oh, okay.
Because what happens is your body releases cortisol. Cortisol does its job by going straight to your muscles. It's called gluconeogenesis, but it breaks down the protein of your muscles and converts it directly into blood sugar. So your blood sugar shoots up just from, it's called rumination. If you start thinking about difficulties from the past, that's when that blood sugar starts shooting up.
Okay.
I'm very familiar with this with myself, so it's not like I haven't dealt with it before also. So I think that if you go to the just walking twice a day.
Okay.
And, if you could do it, if you could walk the first time fasted while you're fasting in the morning, that would be a gold mine for you. And if your first meal of the day was like a big salad with some type of meat that you like, I would really approve of that.
Okay.
And then if you walked after supper, I think you're going to start to win with this. I really do. And I think it'll be really, really fast, like in 1 week. And then there's other ways that you can modify this. You could even try I always think that when I'm dealing with difficult cases, I want to give them something really, really simple. And so if a person says, okay, what do you want me to eat for supper? And I'm going, okay, I can do this. How about we take in some broccoli and melt some butter on top of it and then have a big fish fillet?
Okay.
Now, can I make my joke with your permission?
Absolutely, sir.
Okay. This is about a month ago. It might be an evening. I don't remember what day it was. I was at Traditions. You know what Traditions is? I like Traditions.
Yes.
But anyway, I'm in the cafeteria line, and there's probably five or six people ahead of me. And, I'm a people watcher. I'm watching people all the time. So entertaining to me. And so there was a gentleman in front of me, and he said, I would like the cheesesteak, please. And so they grab one piece of cheesecake. I mean, cheesesteak, excuse me, not cheesecake. And they put it on his plate. I'm going, okay, he just got a serving of meat right there. And the man behind him said, you know what, I'm really hungry for this roast beef. And so they cut roast beef and they put a serving on his plate, and then he got everything else and he had his food ready to go. And then the woman in front of, right behind him said, man, that salmon looks great. I want some salmon. So they take one salmon fillet and I put it on her plate. Anyway, you already know where I'm going with this, but when I got up there, I said, I'd like liver and onions. You would think they're trying to get rid of the stuff because the guy, he just wouldn't stop piling the stuff up. I couldn't eat it all. It was ridiculous. But I would say this. One of the organ systems in the body that helps keep your blood sugar stable is the liver. And the liver is really, really important. And so I really think it might be a good call to have liver and onions once a week. If you're willing to do that. If you're not, I understand. It's your choice. But we're talking about rejuvenation here. What do we do to rejuvenate your body to where you can live?
Mm-hmm.
And so that would be one thing that you might look at. The other thing is, I need you to eat foods that are very, very high in fat. And so if we talked about meat, I don't want you to eat low-fat pieces of meat. No way. I want you to eat stuff like eggs. Eggs are a gold mine. I had a gentleman last night that I was taking care of. I say last night, the last patient of the evening. And they were telling me that it was an emergency. They had to come see me. And I said, how long has this been going on? They said 9 months. I'm going, that's not an emergency. You've been dealing with it for 9 months. But anyway, he was so weak. What I told him was, I said, here's what you want to do. You want to take and lightly fry an egg over easy. Get the yolk as however you want. But I said, why can't you just eat like about 6 to 8 yolks? tonight for supper.
Uh-huh.
And he sort of agreed to doing that because he said he's just completely lost his appetite. He's losing weight. He just feels horrible. By the way, one of the issues I found, the guy is severely dehydrated. I'm telling you, that's like a deal breaker. But if your meals turn out to be very, very simple, like if you said, I love an omelet, well, you can have an omelet for supper if you want. Make it however you wish, but have it with an avocado. That's about as simple as you can get, right?
Yes.
But I think if you could start your day with a high-fat meal, because fat does not require insulin. And so instead of eating the Little Debbie cakes, I know you don't do that. I'm just sort of telling everybody else because I hear that stuff all the time. What if you had like an omelet with an avocado as your meal? That would work. Or if you had like a salmon fillet with a big load of broccoli on it, load up on that stuff.
Okay.
Cover everything in butter. But you're making it easy for your body to heal itself. And just keep learning and growing. But I'm willing to bet anything that you're going to grow a lot through this and you're going to learn a lot. And you give your body about 1 week to a week and a half. And I think you're going to tell me that you're seeing some very significant improvements that are very encouraging.
Wow, that'd be awesome. So an 18-hour fast window.
Yeah.
And I eat a couple hard-boiled eggs every day.
That's fine.
But just put away the grains, huh?
Yeah, and I'm just being honest with you. It's not like I'm trying to be cruel, but the grains are basically, they're going to explode like a nuclear bomb with sugar going everywhere when you eat them.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not trying to deprive you. And, you know, for all I know, maybe you'll do so well for this that once a week you might be able to have a little bit of that and do just fine. I don't know. We'll find out.
Okay. And I also eat a large salad every evening, but I eat late, so maybe that's part of the problem.
Well, if we can just kind of push that late down closer to like 5 or 6 and see if that doesn't give you like a much better... And, you know, it's just one big experiment. All you can do is put everything to the test.
Yes.
Can I ask you a personal question?
Yes, sir.
Do you believe or do you think that God puts us through tests all the time?
Oh, yes, indeed I do, yes.
I do, too. Well, right now, you're putting yourself to the test, and you're trying to find out what's going to break this metabolic code where your body can turn it around and serve you. Make your body obey you.
Okay.
You're in a test right now, and boy, I want to help you win that test.
Yeah, I want to pass this test really bad because I don't want to go down this road any farther. I've already have heart disease and Parkinson's, and I just need to get ahead of this right now.
Yeah, and this is just fabulous. I love everything you're telling me. You're such a great man. Thank you. Thank you for being so open and so vulnerable and letting everybody kind of share in your life. But, yeah, you're in a test right now. Boy, do I want you to win. I sure do. This is great.
Thank you, Doctor.
You're welcome.
Thank you for your kind words.
You're welcome. Oh, no, thank you for your kind words. I sure do appreciate you so much, and let me know how I can help you, okay?
All right. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Take Bye-bye.
Bye now.
You didn't see what happened there, did you? I didn't think so. I successfully tricked another human being into eating calf liver. Did you see how I worked that in there? That was like so super clever on my part. Well, good morning to you. How are you today?
Well, good morning, sir.
Great.
Well, I want you to know I took some college classes as a science major, and I had medical doctors that taught some of them, but I think you are better than the medical doctors I ever had in my college classes.
Oh, man, you're so nice. Thank you very much. If you only knew what my college experience was like, you know who taught me?
No.
Dr. V.L. Shaladia. He was from India. The guy was brutal.
Okay.
I tell you what, you try to goof off and fail, he'd slap you upside the head. He wouldn't let you do that. There's just no way they would get away with that stuff today. And the other guy that was my teacher was Dr. Matthew Mathai. Guess where he was from?
India.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so my teachers in school, they were medical doctors, but they were from India. And I'm telling you, if I even sort of did something wrong, I would get dressed down in front of everybody in the whole world. And you know what? At the time, it was very, very uncomfortable. But you know what? They meant it for my benefit, didn't they?
Well, and you've helped a lot of people, too.
Well, thank you. But you know what? I'm just saying to you right now, thank you, Dr. Mathai. Thank you, Dr. Shaladia, that you were brutal on Roy. They did me a huge favor, didn't they?
They certainly did.
But you know what? I have that inside of me. I don't want to fail somebody, and I don't want to take the easy road. Now, think of it as, if you have somebody that comes to you and they're sick, you can't kick the can down the road and start saying stuff like, well, let's just wait 6 months and watch and wait. Well, you know what that is. That's negligence. Why don't you just say you don't care about them? It's about the same thing. You know what Dr. Shaladia would say to me? Do your job. Do it. Quit goofing off, Roy. Anyway, is there anything I can help you with today?
Okay. 10 years or so ago, I had eye surgery. My lens was cloudy. And it really worked quite well. And I had been taking a prostaglandin, a latanoprost. I'll put a drop or two in my eye. Try not to take it every day. My left eye is 20/20. My right's like 20/30. I'm wondering, are there other things other than taking a drop, you know, of putting a drop of this prostaglandin? I think they found that in coral in the Caribbean first.
Yeah, yeah. And so instead of doing the prostaglandins in your eye, you can just take them orally. It's called cod liver oil.
Which I do take. I listen to you, and I bought a big bottle, and I'm taking it.
You know, if I just gave you like a running list, I'll just say this pretty quick, not so fast that you won't be able to write them down, but if we were trying to change your prostaglandin synthesis, I'd say, okay, how are we going to do that? Well, you got everything for eye health. You got everything from wheat germ oil. You've got cod liver oil. You've got black currant seed oil or evening primrose oil. Those can be home runs for prostaglandin synthesis. Now, the flavonoid compounds in nature that are so good for that, well, number one, what do you think blueberries are? They contain a little bit of a substance called resveratrol. I promise you, there are studies showing that blueberries contain a compound that's very good to improve the health of your eye. What is the most damaging thing to the eyes of all time? Well, it's eating sugar. When I say sugar, I don't mean the sugar that's found in a cherry or an apple or a mango or a blueberry. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about high fructose corn syrup like from a soda water. Would you believe me if I told you that I went to Walmart yesterday morning, it was 7:30, and I watched a man purchase maybe a 60 bottles of Diet Pepsi? It just boggles my mind. I mean, surely he doesn't really know how toxic that stuff is. And so, if you look at stuff like resveratrol, you're helping improve your eyes. I also think that green tea is very, very interesting at helping prostaglandin synthesis, just like turmeric or curcumin. It definitely plays a role in helping assist your genetic code at playing out good commands versus bad commands. So you benefit yourself when you take turmeric. You've probably heard of that stuff, haven't you?
Yes, I take that. I've listened to you quite a while now.
I think that's a good choice on your part. And so when you eat foods that are really, really rich in nutrients, and that would be stuff like broccoli, Brussels sprouts, kale, those are like at the top of the list. I can't even tell you how many people I've seen over the last 32 years that used to have what's called macular degeneration, and it just disappears once. And of course, I'm not trying to overpromise anybody anything. I'm not God here. I'm not promising anyone the moon and the stars, but concentrated Brussels sprouts and kale is a gold mine when it comes to eye health.
Okay, one more question.
Sure.
Wheat germ oil versus, I've heard you say that, and I have wheat germ that's ground up, mm-hmm. and I mix that in with, you know, something for breakfast.
Oh, yeah, and that can be really good. If your body's okay with that, then that should be fine.
Okay, I'd wonder because I didn't get the oil.
The wheat germ oil would probably have more of the concentrated properties that might be a little bit more healing toward eye health.
Okay.
So that's something to think about right there.
All right.
And the thing of it is, it's wheat germ oil. What can it do to destroy your health? Nothing.
Well, cod liver oil makes a lot of sense. I think as kids, yeah. We took that, and I've kind of got away from that. then after you've said this, I went and bought a bottle of it, and I take it every day.
Oh, good job.
Many of the things you've said in this list, I've moved over there, and I'm certainly trying
well,
to do them.
Well, looky there. You're a man of action. You're trying to be a good steward. You want to make sure you can be productive, and your health is the key to walking and moving and breathing, isn't it?
And my wife and I are out walking every day an hour and a half or so.
Are
so.
You really? That is just spectacular.
So what you say we are doing, and immensely appreciate your knowledge of something else.
Well, you're sure welcome. Where do you live?
I live over in Hideaway Lake.
Okay. Good deal.
Close to Lindale.
Yeah, there's a lot of great people out there.
All right. Thank
hey.
You, sir.
Yes, thank you very much. Have a good day, buddy. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
You know, there's another aspect of... all I do is make observations sometimes. You know, you gotta admit, some of this stuff is an experiment. And so if somebody starts eating cabbage, you're trying to figure out, well, is there any positive benefit? What has happened? And so I've just seen really good results from wheat germ oil. Good morning. Welcome to the program. You have to turn the radio down.
Sorry.
Yeah. Just turn the radio off.
Okay.
All right. You're going down the highway, aren't you?
Yes, sir.
I couldn't tell. I'm joking. Anyway, how can I help?
Yes, sir. I have a problem with... actually, I've been taking like one diarrhea pill every day in order to keep myself maintained. If I don't do that, then, you know, of course I have diarrhea. And I was wondering what might be causing that and what might I do to do something other than taking a pill a day.
I read an article on the radio, I want to say 2 months ago, and it was just based on children that had diarrhea in orphanages. And they noticed that when they gave the kids mangoes, all the diarrhea went away.
Mangoes.
Yeah. And let me tell you what they were doing. In order to treat the diarrhea in the orphanage, they had to give them like an anti-parasite drug that would kill some type of protozoal organism. And here's the bottom line. If you've got a bug like a parasite living in the lower part of the digestive tract, your body's going to say, what the heck is this doing here? Let's get rid of it now. And so, thus, that's what causes diarrhea. Your body's trying to eject something as toxic. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir.
And so what they did was they just gave mangoes, which, interestingly enough, mangoes are super-duper high in beta-carotene and vitamin A. And so there's a concept for you.
All right.
Giving your body something that it needs to strengthen the lining of the gut, thereby you have healing that takes place and the diarrhea goes away. So that's one thing. Now, can I ask you a couple questions?
Yes, sir.
Do you have your gallbladder?
No, I don't.
Okay. That's probably it right there.
Well, so, I mean, that's actually when all this started.
Yeah, exactly. And so forget the first thing I said. That doesn't apply to you. I should have asked this question first. But if your gallbladder's gone, most likely what you need to do is you need to go by a health food store and ask them for what are called bile salts. You've heard of smelling salts? Well, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about bile salts. B-I-L-E. And usually the way they get these is when, and I hope this is not gross, I'm not trying to be gross at all, but when they take a cow or an ox to the processing plant, they're washing the bile salts out of their gallbladder and their bile ducts so they can put them in a capsule or tablet form.
Okay.
And so if you would take bile salts during a meal, that may solve your problem totally and very, very efficiently.
Well, that's great. All right. Thank
you. Well, and that's an easy solution, too.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, it's a lot better than what I've been doing.
Well, and plus, I don't want you having diarrhea where you lose all your nutrients. I want you to retain them so you can put them to use.
Right.
Yeah, just get you some ox bile or bile salts.
Bile salts. All right. I'll pick some up today, and I do appreciate your time today.
Hey, you're welcome. Thanks for your call, buddy. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And see, that's probably a concept that I would try to flesh out and improve here. You've got to remember, God has designed your body, and it has requirements. And so you're just trying to obey the laws of nature. If you give the body exactly what it needs, then it can do amazing things, like stay in great working order. Or if you have a problem, well, then you can get what you want. You want healing to take place. Healing, repair, rejuvenation. And you want to get to the point where you have closure. I mean, you've gotten over the hump. And so even something as simple as a mango, it's been shown to greatly repair the lining of the gut or all the mucus line membranes to where it can actually do its job. So I know this is sounds radical that you're not given a drug to treat a problem, but you're just giving the body what it needs. Good morning. Welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Great. Thanks for your call.
Yes. I would like to know what can I do if you have a trigeminal meningitis? I think I'm saying it right.
Yeah.
Or maybe not be pronouncing it right.
Yeah, and let me give you three or four ideas, and I'm going to tell you, some of these are just going to be uncomfortable, but just hear me out, okay?
Okay.
All right. Trigeminal neuralgia. Let me tackle this from like a couple different points of view. So, number one, there is a chemical that is released when you have trigeminal neuralgia. It's called Substance P. The reason they call it Substance P is for pain. Does this person with trigeminal neuralgia have any pain?
Yes.
I'm sorry, I'm not trying to be a jerk and ask a rhetorical question, but we want to get to the crux of the matter. So one of the things that could be tried to see if we can break this cycle and get the body to heal itself is to rub on a topical cayenne pepper salve. And so there's several ones out there that you can buy at the store. One of them is called Zostrix. Z-O-S-T-R-I-X. It looks like a tube of a toothpaste. But in there, they've got a salve that's based on cayenne peppers. And you know that cayenne peppers are really hot, don't you?
Yes.
And so what you would do is you would apply that about four times a day to the area of pain. But I'm going to encourage you to start off really, really small, like a light dose. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yes.
Another product you could use is called Capsaicin P. You can just get that over the counter. But you're applying it to the area so you can try to calm down the trigeminal nerve and get it to heal. Now, in my fantasy world, this is what I wish. I wish I could put you in a hyperbaric oxygen chamber because I think that would take care of it, but I don't have one. If they put me in charge of all the hospital systems here in Texas, then what I would do is I would start construction immediately of hyperbaric oxygen chambers. And what they do is they flood your body with oxygen. But in the meantime, what are we going to do? You've got Zostrix, you've got cayenne pepper salve, you can apply it four or five times a day and give it about 3 weeks to see if it helps resolve this. Now, the big things are with trigeminal neuralgia is I really encourage people not to eat nuts of any kind. Not even peanut butter, not pecans, not walnuts, not macadamia nuts, you know, almonds, leave them alone. Because sometimes I think eating nuts makes it worse or keeps it from healing. The other thing that I wish we could do is give you a shot of vitamin B12 every day for 2 weeks. Because you've got to have vitamin B12 in order to rejuvenate the nerves. Now, in the real world, if you don't have, you could take and get some sublingual B12 and you could suck on these tablets fairly frequently. And the good news is it's just a water-soluble vitamin. If there's any extra B12 in your body, guess what your body's going to do with it? It's just going to flush it out, so when you go to the bathroom, it just passes out through the urine. It's a done deal. So another thing that you can do is you can rub fresh lemon juice and then castor oil directly over the area of pain to see if that starts to break through and help your body to heal it.
You said lemon juice and castor oil?
Yes, ma'am. And that would be fresh lemon juice, not the kind in a bottle.
Uh-huh.
So you could do those, and you could do it just as often as you want. Now, you know if you get a drop of lemon juice or cayenne pepper in your eyeball, it's going to burn, don't you?
Right.
I've been down that road so many times, it's unbelievable. Somebody will come into my office, and they'll say, could you take a look at my knee? I can't move it. And so as soon as I touch it, if I even just barely scratch the side of my face, my eyes on fire, I'm going, well, you should have told me that you just rubbed cayenne pepper all over it. So I've had my own tears over that deal. So, yeah, these are some things that you can do right here that are very, very good.
Now, tell me the name of the that you said that I can get in a tube. Spell those for me.
Well, one is called Capsaicin P. Let me try to write it out here. Okay, I'm going to have a go with this. C-A-P-S-A-C-I-N. K capsaicin, okay. And then the letter P. P means it blocks pain. So what you're doing is, as long as your body is overproducing substance P, it's hard to get the pain to turn off. But we're trying to heal your body and turn it off. So the capsaicin P is something that you could use 4 or 5 times a day.
Okay, and what was the other that had the cayenne pepper in it?
Zostrix, Zostrix.
Okay.
I had a man come to see me one time with trigeminal neuralgia, and I'm just going to be blunt here. He said, if you can't help me, I'm going to take my life. That's how bad it was.
Uh-huh.
Could you imagine that?
I've heard of that, yeah.
Okay. Well, and this is what we did with him. It took 3 weeks, and he was completely cured and healed. And I'm saying, thank you very much, God. Thank you for your blessings. You're such an awesome God.
And he was taking rubbing something like the.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, that's why I told you, because that's what he did.
Okay.
And the thing of it is, it was so long ago, so I can't even remember what recommendations that I gave him. But I probably told him, don't eat nuts.
Okay.
It's hard to overcome a viral infection if you're eating nuts all day long.
Okay. Okay.
And just think, you have 2 new jars of peanut butter.
Uh-huh, yeah. I put it in a smoothie, and I eat pistachios. So
well, not anymore you don't.
No, not anymore.
Well, at least not for the near future. So you can work on that right there.
Yes. Well, Shooter, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for your phone call, and I'm really rooting for you. I wish you the very best, ma'am.
All right, thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Bye-bye. Yeah, I remember that. That was probably like, that had to be easily 25 years ago. I don't really remember. You know what? There's some things that I try to remember, that I work on. But it's kind of funny how the brain works. You have so many experiences, and a lot of them you just kind of push the side because it's like old news and you got to live in the present. And really, you know, actively, I know this is a difficult concept, but when you have a health problem, the only thing that matters is what are the active steps that you're going to take to help yourself. And I'm telling you, you got so many options, but it's so hard for people because if you're going to wait until you're in the mood or you feel like doing it, well, then that day ain't ever going to come. You've got to set your mind like Flint that you're going to do it whether you want to or not. I was talking to the gentleman last night. He could tell me all day long he didn't want to get up out of his chair, but I told him, I said, you've got to make yourself walk to the mailbox and back. He said, it's 1/4 mile away. Going, okay, maybe to the end of the driveway and back. I mean, your carport, something. Something's got to give. Anyway, I think we've run out of time. Thank you so much for joining this morning, and Lord willing, I will be back next Saturday morning at 7 o'clock. You're listening to Health Essentials.